Well, everyone's heard a lot of anecdotes about CBD, of course, with benefit in sleep, anxiety, pain. I've had a tremendous result with a woman that had been struggling with an ankle pain for quite some time, and CBD helped her out. You know, there are a variety of claims being made. It can be difficult to answer with certainty. The clinical science isn't there yet. The sort of risk-reward ratio, we don't know what that is yet. But I've connected with an Oregon-based company that is all about high-quality ingredients, manufacturing standards, not hype. They were previously called Select CBD, but they've just relaunched their brand as Social CBD. Social CBD focuses on broad-spectrum oil, something you also may have heard about, but it's confusing. Let's start there. Hemp has over 60 non-psychoactive cannabinoids, and CBD is one of them, just one. Broad-spectrum oil goes beyond CBD isolate and contains additional active compounds that work together to create what is known as the entourage effect. This then more effectively delivers calming or relaxing effects some people are looking for. Social CBD's broad-spectrum oils contain zero THC, so there is no high or rewarding effects that you might associate, say, with hemp or cannabis particularly. They are available as great-tasting tinctures. Flavors like vanilla mint, pomegranate tea, Meyer lemon, simply drop it under your tongue. Social CBD products are available in a range of formulations, each of which is described, so you can make an informed decision without all the promises that are usually too good to be true. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/socialCBD. That is my website, drdrew.com/SOCIALCBD. And for a limited time, save 20% at checkout with the code DRDREW. Again, 20% with the code Dr. Drew. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. We do appreciate you supporting the people that support the pod and keep the wind in the sails of the Corolla pirate ship. Check out drdrew.tv. If you sign up there, I send out a blast when I do a live stream, and I can answer any questions live right then. You just call in, and if you get that blast, we'll push you to the head of the pack. You get ahead of the queue. We're going to take some calls here today also at drdrew.com. Don't forget After Dark. Check it all out there. And, of course, Adam and Drew is still underway. Nick Hexum, 311. Nick, I don't think I've seen you in like 3 years or something, or maybe more.
Well, we crossed paths briefly here when I was doing Adam's show.
Yes.
But you were sick, so I don't.
If I was sick, that was still probably a year or so ago. I've not been sick much lately. Was it within the last year? What was I sick from?
I don't know, but it was within, I would say, the past 5 months. I'll look up the date now, but he was on ACS this year.
Maybe it was just sleepiness.
It was right before the summer tour with Offspring, so yeah.
How was that? Like,
it was good. It was.
I love those guys.
The Offspring, that was 2 years ago. This year we were promoting
March
Dirty
20th.
Heads.
Well, March 19th would have been the day you recorded, 2019.
So 9 months ago. I love those guys. Dexter's a great guy and just such a great guy.
I hung out with Noodles a lot.
Noodles a great guy.
Since Dexter flies, he just comes in, does the show, and leaves. So I didn't hang out with him. But Noodles was a great hang.
That's so fun. So how are you?
I'm good.
Are you? And the band is good?
Everyone's good.
You've been playing a long time.
We're approaching our 30-year anniversary.
No.
That's right. We started on June 10th, 1990. So
oh, my God. That seems crazy to me.
And I did Loveline with you in
The 90s.
In the early 90s.
Yeah, so. I know. I know it was in the early days of your band. I wouldn't have said it was 30 years ago. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable, man. Well, okay. And across
– five original band members. So that's a crazy long time to have the original lineup.
And we're still kind of like each other?
We still pretty much like each other, especially because we just had about 6 weeks away from each other. So now we got back and had band practice yesterday, and it was
nice.
It was great.
There are live dates coming up in St. Louis at the Pageant Theater December 12th, Minneapolis, the Armory December 15th, Chicago December 15th, tickets at 311.com. If you've not seen 311 live, seriously, you're one of the greatest bands live. If you're even a mild fan of 311, you will love them live.
Thank you very much.
You really will.
We work hard at putting on as good of a show as we can.
I'm looking at something else new, a digital comic book, a CBD line. Tell me about all this stuff.
Yeah,
a lot going on.
Yeah, we had our own, what do they call it, graphic novel where the band members are...
Superheroes?
Yeah.
No!
Solving crimes so in space. And
fantastic.
We sourced some really great hemp-based CBD, and I originally got into that because my mom was fighting multiple myeloma, and it really gave her a lot of relief as she was going through stem cell therapy and everything else.
She good now?
She is in, I guess they'd call it remission. She's doing better for a while, and now her numbers are back up a little bit. But she's coming down for Thanksgiving. She moved from Texas out to, now she's up near Stanford, so she's getting really good care up there. But, you know, she definitely extended her life with the treatments, but, you know, multiple myeloma is usually a terminal.
It's a treacherous illness.
Yeah.
It's hard to predict how it's going to go.
Yeah.
Does she have the kidney problem or no?
No. She just has a really weak thigh bone.
Oh, it's got a tumor.
Yeah. It's like a Swiss cheese bone. That's uh-oh. Just,
and then, oh, so that's painful.
They replaced it. So she's getting mobile again, but it's scary.
How long has she had it for?
Since I moved from, what would have been 2012 that we found out about it. So
that's a good course. That's good. We're doing good here.
Yeah.
And usually when it does good, it keeps doing good. You know, it's kind of the way things go.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the course that you've been through since I've known you. You know, we've been through a lot. And your recovery is good?
Yeah. I feel good. I love Al-Anon. You were talking to the caller earlier. It's just
let's do this. Let's take a call because I think you might like this call too. And then we'll talk in more detail about Al-Anon because it's a program that doesn't get enough attention.
Yeah.
And it bothers me because it's a crucial piece of
– And pretty much everybody could – benefit from
pretty much everybody, and
especially in rock and roll.
and all addicts eventually, when they sober long enough, their codependency stuff starts to, I don't want to say emerge, but it become relevant.
Yeah,
and it becomes time to look at that. Charles, you have a question?
Yes, I do. Hey, Drew.
Sure.
Also, just want to say I love 311, and it's really amazing to hear that all five members have been together this whole time.
Crazy,
it's truly unique. Yeah, well, I hate to bring it down, but I was calling about, you know, here in L.A., we have a massive homeless problem, and a lot of the crime you see is coming from people who are really mentally impaired.
Yep.
And my question is really simple. I guess the city doesn't have a policy or plan to deal with mental health. And I think the ACLU stepped in. Drew, could you tell us what could be done,
yes,
what should be done?
Okay.
Is there other states that don't have as many rules that are maybe doing something? Because it's a tragedy to
yes.
see people out there.
Look to San Diego. San Diego is actually having success. They are looking at it as a mental health problem, managing it as a mental health problem, and guess what? Homeless is going down. So, Charles, read a book called American Psychosis. If you want to know how this happens, that book nails it. It tells you exactly the history that led to the point we're in, and it helps elucidate what we should be doing to solve it. So here you go. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
We have to revisit the Lanterman-Petras Short Act, which in the early 70s, overnight, we went from need for care as the criteria for treating psychiatric patients. A doctor felt the person needed care. They got care. We went from need to care to harm to self or other. There is a giant distance between that person needs care and I'm going to kill myself or kill somebody else. There's a lot we could fill in there to help people who are struggling. So revisit Lanterman-Petras, change the definition of gravely disabled. Two, expand availability of conservatorship. So families, there are thousands of families who want their loved one back and will have resources and rooms for them and doctors to help take care of them. They have to have conservatorship to get them back and get them stabilized. They can get out of the conservatorship after a while, get vocational rehab, but until they stabilize, expand the conservatorship. Three, modify Prop 47 so addicts have some motivation to get well. Leaving addiction as purely whatever, that's a death sentence for drug addicts. You're killing people at the rate of three a day. You're a murderer if you don't help motivate, wake drug addicts up. If you're not doing something to push them towards recovery, you are leaving them to die, and I would say you're a murderer, period. Nick, any quarrel about that one?
No, I'm just – but why did it get so much worse so recently? Is it fentanyl or
– No. It got worse. Well, the opiate addiction, opiate thing, and then meth. Those are the two that are out there on the streets. It got worse because we put in Prop 47 and Prop 57, and so it became – you can use drugs and traffic drugs. No problem. So where do you think all the drug addicts in the country went? They came to us, and they're using, and it's on. And then they've added meth into the opiates, and that's really made it extremely problematic. It's just very difficult to treat people. That happened, And then we appropriately move people out of the prisons. That's the great news here, that we all used to have all the mental health patients in the prisons. They're not in the prisons anymore. Good news. They're on the streets. Huh. So good job, everybody. You could have helped these people or stabilized them or done something. And then finally, you're going to have to enforce vagrancy laws and then create enough psychiatric beds and create enough teams, which is something I worry about. We have a massive psychiatrist shortage in this country. But if we start getting some beds together, expand gravely disabled, this whole thing will go away. That's all we have to do, and the whole thing's over. But the way they're approaching it is anathema. It's absolutely the opposite of what's needed.
I was watching this movie Update, which is a dystopian future where everybody's homeless because of AI and losing their jobs. I was like, no, that doesn't ring true. I think there's a lot of jobs out there.
That's fantastic. So, and that's, you know, that's where, and again, we're talking about the chronically homeless, not the people that are transiently homeless. For the transient homeless, someone down on their luck, someone losing a job, somebody's losing their ability to pay their rent, the average duration on the street is 3 months. People figure it out if they don't have mental illness. They do get through it. There are resources. But when mental illness is in the way or drug addiction is in the way, now you have people dying. Now you have chronic homelessness. Got it?
Yeah. Who's stopping number two, the conservatorship thing? That sounds
It's all
really
the state.
Smart.
It's all the state. They did a pilot program in San Francisco where if you've been on a hold something like 8 times in the last year, they can put you on a conservatorship. Wow, great. They've got to expand it. It's all state of California BS. They have to do LPS. They have to expand conservatorship. They have to revise 47. It's really the laws here that have created the mess.
Well, I remember once about a decade ago, you told me that the laws in California were that even for a doctor, even if you know that this person is just drug seeking.
Yeah.
And they say, I have pain, even if it's a total
oh, that was then.
Story.
Yes.
Has that changed?
Oh, yes. God, I'm so glad you remember that. You're exciting me because I tell that history now. People don't believe me. So back then, if I knew somebody was a drug addict and they came to me and said, I'm having horrible pain, and I didn't treat them.
You would be in trouble.
I could go to jail. Oh, my God. There was definitely lots of civil suits for abuse of patients, for inadequate treatment of pain. And you could know clear as day it's a heroin addict looking for drugs. All they have to do is get the right attorney. You're done. You're toast. So what started happening was all the doctors knew that and were scared of that and sent all their patients to pain management. Pain management took the position that pain is whatever the patient says it is. Pain control is whatever the patient says it is. You can imagine what my patients did with that.
Pill mills and
– oh, it's on. And then they died. And then they died. Yeah. They killed hundreds of my patients. Mm. Hundreds of them. And almost every death I dealt with in the last 15 years was an opiate death, almost everyone, where my peers killed the patient. Mm. Where I begged the patient not to listen, not to take the benzo with the opiate. Please don't do it. Dead 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
It was a horrible, horrible time, I got to tell you. I'm so glad you remember that. I feel like somebody's bearing witness to my pain. Like you remember it. Yeah. Now I just talk about it.
That's a real between a rock and a hard place.
It shouldn't be. It should be. I should be able to practice the way I know how to practice, and especially with this population. I know how to deal with them.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. No. It's heartbreaking. It's really kind of why I got out of running a program. I got very, very, very tired of taking chronic pain patients off opiates. Their pain would go away. They'd be fine. They'd be in their program. And then some doctor would put them on stuff. Did you ever know DJ AM?
Yeah.
Adam Goldstein? Remember what happened to him? He was in a plane accident. He was appropriately put on pain meds and some anxiety meds and then got strung out. And then he had doctors saying, stop listening to those people who are trying to brainwash you. I'm your doctor. You take these medication.
Mm-hmm.
Dead.
Brutal. Yeah. It's
turned around. It's turned around dramatically. In fact, it's turned around too far. It's actually got too far. Now we're people that have cancer and need pain meds. Now it's impossible to get people pain meds that really need it.
Hopefully
it will. The pain world is very upset and very exercised about this, and I can't blame them. But it's least saving lives. I mean, Jesus, you know, you saw the rate of demise. And then fentanyl just accelerated all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So back – let's do a little Al-Anon.
Sure.
Alan, talk about the program, what it is, why you think it's good.
Well, you know, I just think it's an all-purpose life skill. I mean, most of our problems are with how we react to people.
Yes.
And you know, feeling alone and not understood. I mean, people love to relate, and they don't get enough of that. So in a program like Al-Anon, where you're really talking to somebody in a very honest way, where about what's really bothering you, and learning tools and life skills about how to detach with love and not take on other people's drama, and to work on your own side of the street. And it doesn't, you know, 12-step programs in general are wonderful, but it's not about the single purpose of
staying sober
sobriety.
Or something. Yeah.
It's about living in the world.
Thriving.
Life on life's terms.
Flourishing,
and,
yeah.
And it's just I think almost everybody could use it. There's so few people I know that are just naturally not codependent or just, you know.
Right. So let's go deeper. Let's go deep on it, because you're onto it, and I completely agree. I mean, let's even go and start with sort of a first principles, which is, you know, our meaning in life is really derived from other people, right? And the very experience of a self, and the self itself emerges in an interpersonal context. That's where our self comes from. Our attachments are about other people. Our sense of well-being and regulation is about other people. Our sense of meaning is about other people. Really, I humbly believe that consciousness is sort of a co-creative phenomenon. Yeah. I think looking at a single brain is a mistake in terms of trying to figure out the nature of consciousness.
We're all one big organism. It just doesn't feel like it.
Right. And this species would not exist were it not for its social skill and what we've done as a social being. So it's really critically important for the human. I mean, we don't even like pay enough attention to relationships, given its absolute priority in the meaning of life, right?
Yeah.
And things get etched into us early that determine our relating patterns with other people. And some of it can never change, mm-hmm. and that's okay. And some of it can change. And for it to change, we need to connect to other people who are just purely there for us. Would that be a good way to say it?
Yeah.
What brings most people into Al-Anon?
Most people go originally because they are trying to get their loved one to stop drinking.
So that's the most. Most reason is you're going to help me stop my loved one from drinking.
Yeah.
Which is – or using or whatever.
And that was a big motivation for me.
Oh, no kidding.
I lost – I actually lost my younger brother. I have two brothers, but – one that's much younger. I lost him to probably a deliberate overdose a few years ago, like 3 years ago. And it just was – I needed support. You know, it was so confusing, and it really – but trying to fix him before that was, you know, a big – source of pain for me.
Let's talk about that. Here you are, a recovering person. You know how to do it. You've done it. You understand what he's dealing with. And yes.
He didn't want it.
isn't that awful?
Yeah. And then also trying to kind of control other people in the family of, like, you know, stop enabling or whatever. So it was almost like a 2 degrees of Al-Anon where I was trying to. So it was really hard. And I know that I'm a person that shuts down when bad things happen. So when the shit totally hit the fan and I lost my brother, I didn't want to talk to anybody. And that's when it took real, like, you know, that 10,000-pound telephone to make myself relate and talk, because I knew that was where the relief would be. But I really didn't want to do it, because I'm a person that just avoids.
Sure. And especially when there's that kind of pain involved, you just want to, like, move on.
Yeah.
Did somebody recommend it to you, or did you just know?
Yeah, it was, it had started in a romantic relationship previously where I was trying to fix somebody. So I guess I'm just kind of like this, you know.
Perennial Al-Anon.
Fixer. And yeah, so.
So you'd gone to Al-Anon for her back then?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
Oh, 14, 15 years or something.
So you'd had some – and I'm imagining that was sort of like
– a little dabbling.
Yeah, dabbling. Yeah. Chipping in Illinois.
Right.
But I'm sure you saw what goes on there, and I'm sure you also didn't get a sponsor or anything, right?
Not at first.
Right.
You have to be in a lot of pain to do what it takes.
Is it hard?
That's the sad thing, is that people don't do it until they're desperate. You know what I mean? So I try and keep some self-care going so it never gets to that point again, you know?
No, sure. Do you do therapy also, or it's just all Al-Anon?
I have. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But not lately. But yeah, Al-Anon to me is just like the best.
One of the complaints I get from patients sometimes is they can't find a sponsor in Al-Anon. Did you have a struggle with that?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's hard to
– And I want to approach that from the standpoint of, here's how you should approach it if you're looking for a sponsor in Al-Anon. So why do people have trouble? I don't know why. There's more women.
I think
there's more women than men, right?
True.
And so that's something men complain about that.
There's only like a few men's only meetings in L.A., but they're there, and that is my preference because it's just
– Is that where you found your sponsor?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's one solution right there.
Right.
Good. I didn't know about those meetings. That's interesting.
Yeah.
How would you find those?
Well, La Cañada has got a killer famous one that has speakers and great sharing.
At the YMCA or something? Or?
It's at a church. I can't remember which one. But I live out in the West Valley now as well, in Topanga. But and then I think that you have to look for the similarities rather than the differences, because it's easy to find, well, that person's different because of this or that. And, you know, your ego wants to hold on to, I'm different from that person.
All right. Well, let's, because I really want to break this down, because people have resistances built on all this stuff. And indeed, it's not as uniform a population as the usual 12-step meetings.
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, you know, the even 12-step parses itself out into different cultures and different sort of syndromes and stuff. You know, CA is different than AA, different NA. It's all Al-Anon. And so everybody with all their different stories and all their different kinds of codependencies are coming in.
Yeah.
So it is a lot of different kinds of things going on.
Yeah.
But the core phenomenon are always the same. Well, how would you characterize the core phenomenon?
Well, I've heard it described as a spiritual malady, which, I mean, is a little vague, but it's definitely, you know, best treated through spirituality and human connection, of feeling understood. I'm not alone.
Feeling felt.
Yeah, feeling felt.
Would it be accurate just to say it's – because Al-Anon is a little weirdly deeper than – addiction recovery, weirdly.
Oh, yeah. It's the finishing school.
Yeah, it's weirdly – yeah, right. I'm glad you feel that way. And at the core is deep pain.
Yeah.
That's the shared experience. And that deep pain can come from lots of things, but fundamentally it's our own early injuries.
Absolutely. And we naturally find ourselves drawn to the original sin of whatever was that most – painful thing of our childhood, to find someone unconsciously.
To recreate it.
Recreate it.
It's so weird.
And fix it. Make it. This time I'm going to get it right.
It's crazy how humans do that. It's crazy. I'm not even sure we want to do it again. We just go for it. We just attract it to it. It's uncanny how we do that.
It's an irresistible pull to it. So I started through that process of recognizing my own patterns of being a fixer, and started to learn, you know, healthy boundaries. Here is where my existence changes to being their existence, and like knowing.
And that's hard. It sounds easy, but that's hard. And so first of all, you need another person there in your corner. That's first. You need to have that person there just for no other reason than being there for you, which already for people's heart, accepting that, right? But this phenomenon that through hopefully attaching to that person and talking deeply about shame and guilt and all those good things and your history, do you do a timeline with that person, or you just do like a fourth and fifth step?
Yeah. I mean, it's a step working process that will reveal
nothing special,
so much.
Just usual step work stuff. Yeah. Because sometimes people do these sort of timeline things where they just go through every moment.
Then they'll never get through it.
That's true.
You know?
But here's how I experience my codependency, and you tell me if it's if it's fits with yours too, and it's exactly what you're talking about in terms of these boundary issues, is that you see somebody experiencing something and you feel like you feel and understand their pain. Mm-hmm. And what sort of the clue that it's codependency is sometimes it feels like a special understanding. Like you have a special understanding of how that poor person is suffering. When in reality, that person is mobilized. The pain you're feeling is not that person's. It's yours. Mm-hmm. Yours is what's mobilized. And you're mistakening, you're blending your own whatever with whatever that person is triggering in you, perceiving it as something that's in that person. May or may not be in that person, but what's mobilized really is you.
Yeah.
And if you're that kind of codependent, I am, really hard to tell the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have this sort of innate desire to fix something. And so I realize I have to keep my own goals going, because if I don't have my own, whether I'm working to improve my physical or my guitar playing or whatever, if I don't have something, then I will drift towards picking on somebody near me. If you're, wow, you're not doing it right.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have to keep my own
– stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane. Yeah.
I know the fixing thing for me is to stop the pain allegedly in the other person.
Right.
But it's really stopping my own pain.
Yeah. It keeps me from looking in the mirror because I'm focused on them.
How long did it take to tease that all out for you?
A couple years. Luckily, had
takes a while.
A guy I was working with that who favored more of a let's just get through this, because the real benefits are in the ninth step, and you know in AA more people are like you have to do this or else you're going to drink and you're going to die, and Al-Anon doesn't have that quite same urgency, so. You have to make sure you keep it moving. Otherwise, you'll just stay on, oh, I guess I'm supposed to be working the steps, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, my sponsor was like, you got through them all, and a lot of people give up before they get that reward, which is when you get into the amends of like, okay, now I have to own up to what I've done wrong and to go to people, my coworkers, people close to me and own up and not mention anything that I was, you know, a resentment, just to talk about my own character defects. I was manipulative, whatever it is, because that's not going to hurt anybody. You know, that's an amends that isn't going to do harm to them or others, is when if you're coming clean with your own character defects, whatever those are. And then that's when you start to feel so much lighter, and that's in the ninth step.
Do you clean up your side of the street too, or just express your piece of what went down?
Yeah, it takes various forms. I mean, for me, it also took stuff from ancient history of owning up of like stuff I had done as a kid. Whatever.
Did you go make amends to people?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Got to do it. I was a wild child. And there were certain things where we figured, okay, that would possibly do harm to them or others. So you're going to need to do something more anonymous where
just do something good for them or something.
Yeah.
Some service.
Yeah.
You've all heard me talk about Blinkist. Oh my God, it's so great. They distill down for you to read or for you to listen the really important highlights of nonfiction books. It's incredible. Nonfiction books have always been my source of information, and now I can get through them, and the ones I never get to seem to be able to read or listen to, I don't get to them because they're too long or I don't have time. Well, now with Blinkist, you can get to it. Things like The 4-Hour Workweek or Becoming by Michelle Obama, they get down to it. Fire and Fury, The Inside the Trump White House by Michael Wolff. Right now, for a limited time, we have a special offer for our audience. So with Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to their massive library of condensed nonfiction books. All the books you want and all at one low price. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has our special offer for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Drew. You can try it for free for 7 days. Again, that's an incredible offer. And then save 25% off your new subscription. That is Blinkist, BLINKIST, Blinkist.com/DREW to start your free 7-day trial. Pay attention, it's Drew, not Dr. Drew. And in addition to the free 7-day trial, you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/Drew. If you like my show, you're going to love Brad Behavior with Brad Gorski. New podcast from the Lady Gang Network and Podcast One. From the red carpet to the runway, TV personality, stylist to the stars, and author Brad Gorski gets undressed in candid interviews with other celebs and friends. Each week, they contemplate and celebrate fashion, pop culture, and life's random surprises. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss Brad Behavior every week on Apple Podcast and Podcast One. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, affects more than 16 million Americans. This is November, and it is COPD Awareness Month. People with this disease, of course, struggle to breathe, making simple everyday activities like walking or climbing stairs very difficult. Inhalers are an important tool for managing COPD. There are several types available. Each works differently. Inhalers deliver the medications in different forms, like dry powder, MDI, or slow-moving mist. Discuss all this with your doctor, which inhaler is right for you. To find out more, visit womeningovernment.org. How any interesting stories in the men's process?
There was.
I think I was in a men's of yours at one point.
Yes,
think
you
about,
were.
Think
you were,
and I don't think I received it quite right.
No, my favorite thing that you said at the end: I receive your amends with delight.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
So that was
because that's how it should be. So, but, I remember because I have to resist being codependent when I'm getting an amends.
Right,
and making everything okay. No, 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 it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. I didn't experience it that way.
No, you, yeah, so, you were right, good. Middle of the road.
Okay, good.
But yeah, there was a situation where I had – something really bothered me that I had done to a friend from my teenage years, and I called that person up, and they did not have memory of it, but they said, you know what, I'm really into helping animals, so if you feel like you need to do something – donate to an animal charity. And I was like, great suggestion.
Done.
Thank
and
you.
Done. Yeah. Yeah. I could, that seems very nice and specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody left feeling better. So that's yeah. ideal.
Did was there in the sense of, is it him or her?
It was a him.
A him not remembering it. Was there any negative affect involved?
Oh yeah. It was, okay. You know, drunken shenanigans and stuff. So.
And then the Al-Anon amends, are they different? That was that sounds like an addiction amends.
Well, I had a guy who was a double winner, so it was.
But I'm imagining Al-Anon, because people get confused by Al-Anon amends because again they're having trouble understanding that I was just trying to help. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
you know they don't really see it, oftentimes.
Yeah, it's more of a murky thing because usually people. And when it's a strictly an Al-Anon thing, somebody had good intentions.
Right.
And also,
so-called.
Yeah. And also you have to remember that the word amend means to change your behavior. So it's also about changing that behavior going forward, whether it's with that person or just how you live. So knowing that you're making a change, not just a restitution. You know what I mean? There's a difference between amending a behavior and
oh, yeah.
making a restitution.
Oh, yeah.
So
And different than apology.
Yeah.
These are all three different things, and people get very confused about that stuff.
Yeah. If you do a payoff and keep going to do the same thing, you're right. missing the whole point.
That's right. Interesting. Well, isn't that really what the 10th step is for? To sort of
the maintenance.
Finish it and yeah. maintain it and,
yeah.
you know, and then trying to pray for the defects to be taken away.
Yeah. Well, I would say – 3 and 11, I love that. 3 and 11 are the real, you know, the spiritual,
yeah.
just connecting to something. And that really trips a lot of people up. And I kind of grew up as this like condescending atheist kind of person. So it took me a minute to – but then, you know, my sponsor just said it makes your recovery a lot harder if you're going to fixate on –
concept.
What you don't believe in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So
you're just
you,
making it harder on yourself. But so just kind of go with it.
It like, is tough
right.
for people.
I'm doing something nice for myself to have this prayer and meditation in my life, even if I don't really know what I'm praying to or whatever. It's
right.
more
even
of
if it's
an
just
act
a,
of humility,
yeah.
Which is so needed.
Well, help with that because I have trouble getting people over that hump, especially the millennials these days. They want nothing to do with it. And it's like, no, it's not about – yeah, some people it's God. Other people it's nothing like that. It's something totally different. It's whatever you need it to be.
Well, to
then
me –
then they get – they don't understand.
I don't have to – here's how I got around it. I said I know that love is a force in the world that makes people do selfless things, you can see that it exists, of whether it's from heroic acts or look at Mother Teresa or, you know, Gandhi's nonviolent, like love exists.
Moms every day, you know, yeah, mothers.
Absolutely. School teachers, yeah, thankless jobs, whatever. There's, I know that love exists. And then, so if you, you know, love, God is love and love is God, you can just kind of interchange those words. And rather than saying I'm going to pray for somebody, I might say I'm going to send them kind regards. You know what I mean? So it's, you can find your own way to make more comfortable with that. But there is a spiritual component that you have to grapple with, and it does turn some people off. But
I think they find exception when they're in the room and there's a lot of language that's uncomfortable for people.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a repetition of things that use language that people are like, no, it's not my thing. So it's easy to find a way out that way.
Yeah, and we're looking for reasons to get out of there and get back into our pain cave. You know what I mean? That's the hard part. You have to get out and get through the discomfort.
And with Al-Anon too, though, you don't really – the average person would not really understand where they're going. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because they don't – they know there's some pain. They know they're doing this behavior. They don't – it's almost like taking somebody who's never walked and go, no, I need you to walk now. Well, I've never done that. I don't know how to do that. I don't even know what you're talking about, really.
Yeah.
So why should I learn how to walk? I've never walked before. I don't need to walk. I don't know what that is even. So it's hard to motivate people to stay into this unknown is what it is.
Well, a lot of people think because they're going to try and get perspective on someone else's
drinking,
then they think it's going to be a meeting about, all right, here's how you do an intervention.
Yeah. Yeah,
here's how you corral
person. Here's how you fix them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're always disappointed.
When it's – no, you need to work on yourself so you're not living or dying by this other person's activities.
Yeah.
And that's a big hallelujah moment when people start looking in the mirror and really realizing, oh, I've been doing the same pattern with different people throughout my life.
It goes one of two ways. Either they have that little moment or they get angry.
Yeah. Like,
what do you mean it's about me?
Yeah. No, there's people that – kick over chairs and storm out. And
really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Does that happen commonly?
No. I would say Al-Anon is actually more of a very gentle kind of place.
Yeah.
You're in a place where people that have significant recovery, it's a very calm place where if you go into like a Cocaine Anonymous meeting and it's so loud, it's just so loud, all these.
Because everybody's new?
New and just, I guess, the type of personality that led them there.
That life stimulants, yeah.
But, you know, if you get around some black belt Al-Anons, there's just such a calmness that is very appealing. But it just takes you a while to tune in on it and realize, wow, that person is like a little Buddha over there.
As a result of having been involved with this, have there been other insights that you've come upon or changes other areas of your life?
You know, I used to, early on, and I mentioned this in the Psychology Today, interview that I did, which was so cool to be in that magazine because I come from a family of psychologists.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And that early on in our marriage, I would find myself kind of nitpicking, and then I realized that I need to go and work my own program and have my own set of goals, like I mentioned earlier, and so I'm not so focused on what my perceptions of what she's doing wrong, and now we have a wonderful marriage because we each kind of go get our own support,
mm-hmm.
you know, separately, and that's a much better way to live.
Yeah, it unravels the enmeshment.
Yeah.
So again, this idea to me that people miss is having someone in your corner.
Yeah.
Or having a corner.
I mean, I feel like I'm doing push-up. I have three daughters now growing up in LA.
God.
Who knows what I'm going to have to
oh my God. How old
be
are they?
Ready for. They're 8, 10, and 5. So everything's cool. But I'm starting to get a little bit of, like, you know, puberty hormones kind of attitude. I'm oh, there's just not that much longer until this. Like,
what are you doing with screens with them?
Yeah, well, we have a we let that be a reward for once they've done piano practice and homework and chores, and we have this app called Our Pact that allows me to turn off their screens remotely, which is awesome.
Our Pact.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah, the screens. I really believe one day we may look at screens the way we look at, like, tobacco.
Really?
Like, how do we leave? Yeah, we leave the kids alone with that. How do we do that? Yeah, it's concerning. We don't even know the full impact yet.
I mean, you know, for when 3.11 started, there was no online anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe at university. So, we probably would have tried to go viral through a YouTube video or whatever at that time. So I can't blame them for wanting to.
Oh, you would have been way into it. Are you kidding me? Oh, you would have been deep in.
So I try not to be too black and white.
No, we'll see. Right. And that's I don't think – well, my kids have screened. My kids are adults now. But I don't think I could have prevented. I have friends that are psychologists and are way into the digital health. And they will just give their kids, like, you know, 30 minutes, 60 minutes. That's it. I don't think I could do that. I would feel too disconnecty. I'd be disconnecting them from their peer development.
Yeah. Well, you know, living in Topanga, there's quite a wide variety. Some people are very chill about it, and there's other people who are, like, totally Waldorf and Rye and, like, no electronics whatsoever.
Wow. But,
I would say we're pretty middle of the road about it. I mean, I'm
– Well, you could shut the screens off if you want to.
Exactly. So. And I do.
Tell me about Cameo and Nick Hexum. What's going on, Cameo?
You know, I watched your Cameo introductory thing, and you said it's all about connecting. I'm all about connecting, so this seems like a great way to do it.
Yeah.
It's turned into – well, first, for people that don't know what it is, you can get, like, a personalized shout-out, which is going to be a little 1 or 2 minute long video. Usually it's a birthday or, you know, hey, this – friend of mine is a huge fan. Would you like sing a couple lines from your favorite song? But then it's also turned into, you know, people saying, my best friend just lost their parent or their loved one, and then I would just share my experience.
I find myself sometimes doing some pretty heavy championing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got this, I'm sure you're doing the following things, and if you're not, make sure you do it.
And people seem to get a lot out of it, and I know it makes me feel great. And my wife has gone through a hard year of losing both of her folks, one after the other, to cancer. Mm-hmm. So just talking about my experience of helping her through that and how it's, you know, we've got to come together.
If you think that social media is a form of connection, which it is not, this is actual connection. This is you, you know, learning a little something about a person and then giving something back. Actually giving them something.
Yeah, it's one-to-one. And I actually always set – you can set it so the videos are public to go in your feed or private. I always set it to private because I really just want to talk to that one person. But, you know, it has been a tough year around the Hexum household because of that, because
of your wife's parents.
Your
daughters feel that one. Those two, they're close with them.
Yeah, and they're getting their own help too, because some of them really feel it and have kind of grieve properly, and other people just act like it doesn't care, act like they don't care. So, and I'm more of the latter naturally. So I'm trying to, you know, be as supportive as I can, and that's why I'm, you know, glad I'm in Al-Anon.
Does it affect your parenting, do you think, the Al-Anon program?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. To be in a band or to be a parent, it's a big skill set that helps.
Yeah, the parenting thing, again, think about how invested you are in your children, how connected you feel, and how easy it is to get unclear on what's you and what's them.
Yeah.
Because you're with them from the time they're zygotes, essentially. You know, you remember all – it's a very uncanny experience. I mean, you remember all that. You're connected to all that, but you've got something different in front of you. It's
– Yeah. And just to have those experiences with my kids where I will tell them about, be really honest about something really hard that I went through, even if it was like I had an older sister who was better at everything than me, faster runner, better at piano, all these different things. So when I talk to my middle daughter, hey, I was a middle kid too, and I had an older sister that was overshadowed me in these, and she got so into that story.
Oh, really? Tell me again. Yes. Tell me more. She wants to hear it over and over again.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's too funny. And they're, are they getting into sports and all that kind of stuff? Are they?
They're very into. They're little hams. They're doing a play
theater.
This weekend. Two of them. Yeah.
Fantastic.
My youngest daughter actually landed a. I can't say what it is yet, but it's a cool TV role.
Nice.
And so they're little showbiz kids, for better or for worse. I think they're very as grounded as you can be to be in that. But they love make-believe and they love the attention. And there's kind of a competitive thing going on, but it seems to be pretty healthy.
They get along?
Yeah, they get along. It's
any surprises for you in the parenting experience?
I mean, I wonder whatever I ever did with all the free time before.
it's
nonstop, and but I love it. It's just the most rewarding thing.
Isn't it weird to think, like, how would you make meaning of life as you age?
Yeah,
which is what we're doing.
Yeah,
without leaving that legacy.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's not even a legacy in the sense that that's me. It's legacy in the sense that that's the world. It's like the world needs to keep going and growing, and
yeah,
that's how.
It's basically raining babies in 311 land. Once I had my daughter, then since then there's been like nine more 311.
Oh my God, that's so crazy.
It's like when we have a big event show where the families come in, there's like huge, one dressing room is nothing but a big romper room.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Diapers.
Do they all know each other and get along with each other? Oh my
Absolutely.
God, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And does that affect the ability to tour now?
Yeah, they just would come – like they come on the – a lot of the kids come on the cruise because that's just perfect for
– Is that coming up?
That we do that every other year. So this coming March 11th, 311, will be a 311 day, which is in Vegas. And we're doing three nights for the first time at the Park Theater in Las Vegas on March 10th, 11th, and 12th.
That's that new
– It's gorgeous.
Yeah. It used to be the Monte Carlo Hotel, right? But that's the Park MGM.
The dopest theater in Vegas. Well, like every
– Please let
every
me know
wall,
when that's coming. I want to go. I want to go this year.
It's 311, so you can't forget March 11th.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd love to have you. But like everywhere you look is a 4K screen, so you can have this completely immersive audiovisual experience that allows – we on 311 day, we get to be like, you know, a super band of like no expenses spared to – so that's a lot of fun. But and then the following year we'll do another cruise. We've done six cruises to various destinations, always in the Caribbean. So
not sure if I can do that again. I just did the Corolla cruise, and I'm sort of Caribbean cruised out.
Gary, was it all men or
– No. There was tons of people. It was actually a delightful group of people, really delightful. You have to do that one every year? Or more than every year?
We've done one pretty much every 12 to 13 months. I think next year there's – between the one you went on and the next one, there's like a 14 or 15-month break, which might be the longest.
And where is that one going? I think I heard
New Orleans.
Just sixth man put them on? Is it sixth man the – no. So
no,
it's a
gentleman named Parker who's just – he's kind of a small group organizer, and he got the right email contact, and he's just – he's been an all-star. And the Corolla Cruise is like – I'm sure a lot of this is your cruise too, but it's at least 50 or 60% rebookings every year.
Yeah.
And I did say I'd go again, so I'll try to live by that.
All right.
but I'm cruised out for the moment anyway. Right. But I'm having a really interesting experience right now talking to you, which is I feel like normally when I talk to somebody I've known as long as you, I feel like, oh, the passage of time. I feel like I'm right back where we started in a weird – if that makes even sense.
Well, like look about the same.
No, you do too. but it feels like not that no time passed, but that I'm youthfully engaged with you. You know, like what we had at the beginning is still here.
Yeah.
And time and all the kids and all this stuff hasn't changed.
Yeah, you've seen me go through some stuff.
But it's all good. It's all and you were fine before too. It's just better now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so congratulations on all this. And I'm hoping that I'm hoping people listen to the Al-Anon story. I'm really glad we dove into that because it is something that I'm championing all the time. And when I tell people to do it, I'm not saying, hey, you need to exercise a little more and get some fat out of your diet. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you must go. It's an order.
Yeah.
And not only are you contributing to the demise of the person you claim to want to help, if you don't go, you're contributing to your own I don't want to use too strong a word, but your own misery.
Yeah.
And there's
always a misery back guarantee. If you don't like it, you can always go back to your own pain.
You go back to your misery. It's all good. It's all good. And that's sort of what's happened to me, I think, in recent years. I've become less of a – never a book thumper, but more – less of a intolerant of people that weren't ready.
Yeah.
I get there's such a thing. There's a lot of it. But I would wish to ask the people when we say, you know, and they go, I'll do anything for my family member. What can I do? I said, first, go to this thing called Al-Anon and get a sponsor. And that's not a loose suggestion.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you must do, and you must do it now, and you must keep going.
And it's a program of action. Some people will kind of feel they're too smart for it.
It's slow.
My mom is a PhD in psychology, and she just couldn't get into it because she was like, "The president of the AAMFT in Nebraska. Like, I already know all this.
She knows too much."
And I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Well, then, did she do therapy?
Because
I did years and years of therapy, and it's important to sit and be with another human.
Not much.
Because a lot of it is not about thinking and talking. It's about being with another person and feeling felt, as I said earlier. And that's – I don't care how much you know. That experience is what's important.
Well, just it's hard for people to ask for help when they're not desperate. And for me, I had a huge aversion to asking for help in any way. And then once I did, the floodgates of asking for help broke. And now I will ask for help on anything, whether it's working with a personal trainer, taking guitar lessons, listening to my financial manager telling me.
Interesting.
Now I check with, hey, is this a good idea? Where I used to never.
Wow, interesting.
Do that.
Yeah, that's good. So, all right, my friend, we got to wrap this up. It's great to see you. Cameo/Nick Hexum, the comic book, the CBD line, holiday beer coming around. At Nick Hexum, H-E-X-U-M on Twitter. St. Louis in the 12th, Minneapolis the 14th, Chicago the 15th of December, all at 311.com, and then Vegas on March 11th. We'll all see you there.
Great seeing you.
All right, man, good to see you too. Bye. See you next time.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.